All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves tonight in the 10th bracha of Shmona Esrei, the bracha that we'll call Kibbutz Golios, or the ingathering of the exiles. Our shiur series is sponsored by Richard Simon in memory of his grandmother, Elka Freda Bas Chana Lea Shalom. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, her neshama has an aliyah. And also by the Tosel family, in memory of Karen's father, Elio Gershon ben Faiva Lakoin, Zichrono Levrach. We hope that in the merits of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama will have an aliyah. So let's take a look at number one. Tika b'shofar gadol cheruseinu, v'sa neis lekabitz galiosinu. Sound the great shofar for our freedom. Raise high the banner to gather our exiles. V'kabtzini yachad mi'arba kanfos ha'aretz. And gather us together from the four corners of the earth. Baruch atah Hashem, mekabetz nidchei amo Yisrael. Blessed are you, Hashem, who gathers the dispersed of his people Israel. So, just to focus very simply, we've already noticed, by the way, that whereas many of the brachos themselves don't necessarily have any kind of biblical origin, some of the brachos do. So this happens to be one of the brachos that is virtually plucked right from the Pesukim of Yishayahu. If you take a look at number two, so the Navi Yishayahu says, Vayo bayomahu, it will be on that day, Yitaka b'shofar gadol. A great shofar will be sounded. Ubo ha'ovdim be'eretz Ashur. And ultimately, those who are lost in the land of Assyria, v'hanidochim be'eretz Mitzrayim, those who are exiled in Egypt, and what will happen? V'yishtachavu la'Hashem b'har HaKodesh v'Yerushalayim. They will bow down to HaKodesh Baruch Hu on the holy mountain in Yerushalayim. What is the bayomahu? What is the day to which the Navi is referring to? So if you look at number three, there's a beautiful Al-Sheikh. The Al-Sheikh writes, Ach b'yom ha-ge'ula. It refers, of course, to Messianic redemption. That day, refers to Yimos HaMashiach, when Mashiach comes. And what's going to happen? It happens to be a beautiful Al-Sheikh. The Al-Sheikh writes that on the day of redemption, Livnos Bayis Shlishi, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to command us to build the third temple. You know, there's a dispute, there's a machlokas as to how the third Beis HaMikdash is going to come into being. Whether or not we're going to have to actively build it ourselves, whether it's going to descend fully built from Shamayim. In either way, it will be on that great day when we are commanded to build the third Beis HaMikdash, as lo yiyeh gvul katan, kim kala olam. So the Asher here says something very beautiful. He says that whereas the first two temples were much smaller and were able just to occupy the Temple Mount, the third Beis HaMikdash is going to be much larger. He says, literally, is actually quoting over here from the Medrash that says, going to encompass the entire world. Obviously, that's a little bit of madrashic hyperbole, but pointing out the idea that ultimately the third Beis HaMikdash, its impact will be felt ultimately throughout the world, even if geographically it will only occupy a much smaller space. Kiyaz bayomahu yitaka b'shofar gadol. On that day, a great shofar will be blown. Uba ovdim banidachim shehu mehala l'shivoles hanar ulahala minacha mitzrayim. Everybody who is scattered, everybody who is dispersed will come back. So what's interesting, says the Al-Sheikh, what the Pasuk is pointing out, is this ingathering of exiles is not going to happen all at once, but rather again, people will come from all corners at all different times. Kim ubo har beyachad, many will come at once. V'yishtachavu la'Hashem b'har HaKodesh. Shuterem yivne beis hamikdash sha'odenu har b'Yerushalayim ki kibbutz golios hu tchila. So the Al-Sheikh here says something very beautiful. The Al-Sheikh explains that the pasuk is referring actually to the various steps of redemption. The first step in messianic redemption is something we call kibbutz golios, the ingathering of the exiles. That's what the pasuk in number two is describing. Vayo bayamahu, it will be on that day. That day is a reference to the day of messianic revelation. And what's going to happen is going to be a great shofar sounded, and all those who are lost, all those who are scattered, all those who are exiled will come back. Now, what the Al-Sheikh points out is, where will they assemble? Bahar HaKodesh Birushalayim. Where will they assemble? They will assemble at the holy mountain. Why does the Navi call it a holy mountain? Because there's not going to be a Beis HaMikdash yet. first step in messianic redemption is the ingathering of the exiles. Once everybody comes back to Eretz Yisrael, then we could talk about the third Beis HaMikdash. But first, again, everybody comes back, third temple occurs afterwards. So already you understand, and you could see again, the similar verbiage, that again, Tekah b'shofar gadol, v'haya b'yom hahu, yitaka b'shofar gadol. Same shofar gadol. So here you see, remember that Shmona Esrei, as we have it, at least in our version now, was made by Anshei Knesset Gadol, the men of the Great Assembly. So clearly, when the men of the Great Assembly were able to borrow previously existing phraseology, so they did so. When they weren't able to do so, they didn't do so. So here we see this shofar gadol blow, literally sound the great shofar. It's the great shofar of Yeshayahu, which is the great shofar of messianic redemption. Similarly, if you take a look at number four, so again, the Navi Yeshayahu says, V'nasa neis legoyim, he shall raise a banner to the nations, V'asaf nitche Yisrael, he shall gather the lost of Israel, Unafutzos Yehuda, and the scattered ones of Judah, Yikabetz mi'arbakan fosan aretz, will he gather from all the four corners of the world. So again, you see that between number two and number four, remember number two is from chapter 27 of Yeshayahu, number four is from chapter 11, but you can clearly see that the verbiage of our bracha as expressed in number one is a collection, or really almost is like a cut and paste of the phrases used by Yeshayahu. So again, in number two, we have our shofar gadol. In number four, we have the sot neis, the nasa neis, representing this, that Mashiach will ultimately raise up the banner of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, asaf nitche Yisrael, v'kabetz, v'katzini yachad. So again, you see where all the phraseology from number one comes pretty much from the two pesukim in Yeshayahu. So therefore, this bracha, which is actually interesting, is that so far out of everything we've studied, this bracha actually seems to be the most straightforward. Because what are we asking for over here in this bracha? Mashiach. We're asking for redemption. So why don't we speak about the Mashiach? So just remember, very often in Tuesdays, we don't speak. I spoke about this a couple of years ago, Shavuos, about Mashiach and Judaism. So understand, Mashiach was really popularized by Lubavitch. Right? It was really popularized by Lubavitch. That's how Mashiach came in. I mean, they didn't invent it, but they certainly made it a household word. The truth is, it wasn't just Lubavitch. Hasidus popularized the concept of Mashiach. There's a big dispute within Judaism in general as to how to approach the topic of Mashiach. Because remember, the Torah doesn't speak about Mashiach in explicit terms. There are a couple of veiled references to Mashiach. Probably the most explicit one is in Parshas Vayechi, where Yaakov Avinu is giving a blessing to his son Yehuda, and he says, "Lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda u'mechokik mi bein raglav." The scepter shall not depart from Judah ad ki yavo Shiloh, until Shiloh comes. So it's interesting, by the way, if you've ever had missionaries show up at your front door, this is one of the most often quoted psukim, because they translate Shiloh as a reference to Jesus. So we know Shiloh, of course, is a reference to the Mashiach. It's Mashiach. So we have veiled references like that. Not our topic for tonight, but there's a whole discussion within Judaism as to how much emphasis we should actually place on Mashiach or not. On one hand, you say, of course, we should emphasize Mashiach. We should scream it from every hilltop. The danger of that, of course, is what? Right? When he doesn't show up. So when he doesn't show up, so the Rambam writes, you have to wait in anticipatory excitement. But again, we could see that some of the greatest Shabtai Tzvi, right? Shabtai Tzvi, the whole episode of false messiahs. So there's a doctrine in Judaism that is titled Messianic Quietism. Messianic Quietism means we believe in Mashiach, but we don't speak about it all of the time. It's not the center. It's not the center. You can even see, the truth is, even in Lubavitch, where there was such an incredible emphasis on it, unfortunately, after the death of the Rebbe, it led to ridiculous notions that the Rebbe was Mashiach. So one has to be very careful without. So just pointing out over here that if you notice in the bracha, there's no explicit mention of Mashiach. Instead, what do we ask for? We ask for the ingathering of the exiles, which of course is the first step in messianic redemption. So in reality, what we're asking for over here is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, redeem us. Bring us back. This, interestingly enough, if you look at everything we've asked for until now, we've been focused much more on, what we'll call, you know, tachlitic type things, right? We've been focused on knowledge. We've been focused on refuah. We've been focused on helping us through our struggles. We've been focused on parnasa, what we'll call day-to-day needs. Now we begin to become a little bit more globally focused, nationally focused, destiny focused. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, bring the gathering of the exiles. Bring us back to Eretz Yisrael. Let us stand on the mountain even before the Beis HaMikdash is there. If you look at number five, Rav Hirsch continues on this thing and he says very beautifully. He says, this is the plea for the geula of the entire Jewish community. We're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to redeem Klal Yisrael, for whom there can be no chirus while it is in Golos. This is a message that is very important to reinforce to us, the community of Golos. We live in a wonderful community. Thank God we live in a wonderful country, but we must never lose sight of the fact that this is Golos. This is exile. This is not where we're supposed to be. It's just where we are. See, he says over here, he says, there could be no chirus. There is no redemption. There is no redemption in Golos. Its redemption will begin only once all of its members will be gathered together out of this dispersion in order to be reunited. But such a reunion cannot be brought by human action or even only through the intermediary of human effort. We must wait for God himself to sound the shofar. Even as the individual can hope for geula, rei banyenu, only after he has first passed through the stages of das, knowledge, tshuva, repentance, slicha, forgiveness, so our people can expect collective geula, only after all of us have reacquired for ourselves the only true perspective of things, and after we all will have returned to his law and to his faithful service so as to be deserving of forgiveness and pardon. Any allegation that deliverance can be obtained by other means than those is nothing but dangerous folly. So Rav Hirsch here says something that is very dramatic. Rav Hirsch explains that how does the bracha open? Tika b'shofar gadol l'cherusim. Yes, we are asking for redemption. We are asking for redemption. And who brings about the redemption? Who brings it about? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now this, of course, by the way, again, not our topic for tonight, but you know, one of probably the major divides still within the Jewish people to this day is how we view the contemporary state of Israel. Is the contemporary state of Israel aschalto de geula? Is it the beginning of redemption? Or is it something that's not the beginning of redemption? Or choose the third approach is it's something actually that's negative. All this has to do with fundamental differences in understanding as to how the final redemption is going to unfold. So there is a school of thought that says final redemption does not occur through our hand at all. It demands absolute passivity on our part, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring it about by himself. And any attempt for humankind, for the Jewish people to intervene, to accelerate, to move forward that process of redemption as an exercise in futility, and actually is a lack of belief. It's a lack of belief. That's why, again, there is a hashkafa between what we'll call like an anti-Zionist approach. There is a hashkafa to it, and it's a solid hashkafa. It's an hashkafa that goes and advances many sources. Others believe that, no, again, this is a share by itself, but others believe that, no, again, yes, we believe tikah b'shofar gadol l'cherusim, only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can bring about the end of geula. But it's our job to advance the process as much as possible to get it as close to the end, recognizing what? Recognizing what? I can't finish it. We can't finish it. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can finish it. But I could do my part in advancing it as close to completion as possible. So again, what Rav Hirsch is pointing out over here, Rav Hirsch is saying that what the bracha really instills within us is this idea that whereas there are many things that we do have control over, like many processes that we do control, at the end of the day, geula only comes about through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's almost like Anshei Knesset HaGedolah understood that the time would come where we would often hinge our hopes on others, whether the others be nations of the state of Israel that would help it, United Nations, other governing bodies. And we come to realize, which we know in our day, in our contemporary day and age, that geula will not come through any human means. It will not come through allies. It will not come through people. It doesn't even really come through us. We do our part to advance the process as much as possible, but at the end of the day, real geula, real redemption, only comes through the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tzika, you God have to sound the shofar gadol l'cheiru senu. You God are the only one who can blow the shofar. You God are the only ones who could gather the exiles. You are the only one who can bring us back from all four corners of the earth. Geula, final messianic redemption, only occurs through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But perhaps, yes. Go ahead.
Is he saying, because he says we do have to do something. He says we have to do that.
Correct. No, no.
But is he getting that from the
previous brachos? That is correct.
He's saying that our redemption, like that really,
we could,
are laying out a plan for our national
redemption. We can achieve personal redemption. I, as an individual, could achieve personal redemption. I do that through Atachonin LaAdam Das, Reina Ba'anyenu. I could do my part in redeeming myself.
But then he goes on and says, we need a collective return and a collective. So is he saying that they're also laying out the steps for our, because he says, we have to, as people, you know, the true perspective of things.
And right, but again, look at, like he says again, any allegation that deliverance could be obtained by other means. Other means means human means.
Oh, I thought it means other means than those of...
No, 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 no. He's saying over here that we could do our part in refining self. We could do our part in redeeming the personal persona. But ultimately, again, we don't redeem our nation. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu redeems us. Yes. Correct. This gets into all fundamental machloksim in terms of Mashiach. In terms of Mashiach, which not our top of today, but correct. There is an opinion in the Gemara that says that if we totally abdicate all responsibility, God will come through because he'll see we're not doing it ourselves. Clearly, this tefillah is not reflective of that because remember, there are the previous steps of redemption before that. Different this, again.
Saying there's no other way. Only we're all
going to
achieve. It sounds like we all have to achieve our Jewish enlightenment, and then
it should have been. No, I want to be clear. Rav Hirsch. I should reread the Rav Hirsch because clearly I didn't read it clearly enough. Look again at number five, the middle. Just pick up from the middle over there. He says, even as the individual can hope for geula, the individual can hope for geula. The individual, I can hope for my own geula, not national geula. Only after he has first passed through the stages of Das, Tshuva, and Slicha, right? Remember, I have to go through my part. So our people can expect collective geula only after all of us have reacquired for ourselves the only true perspective of things. What's the perspective? After all, we have returned to his law, to his faithful service, so as to be deserving of forgiveness and pardon. Which means what? We have to refine ourselves to the point where we realize that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu could redeem us. We do our part in redeeming ourselves, in lifting up ourselves, and ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does the rest in redemption. That's where our verse ends. Any allegation that deliverance can be obtained by other means than those is nothing but dangerous folly. So our verse lays out a process. Person has to redeem himself. Nation has to come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when that happens, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will redeem the nation. But ultimate redemption only comes from God. Look at number six. So I'm going to show with you another approach as well. He says, and again, I want to be clear, just so you understand, when we say that final redemption only comes from God, that's not freeing us of responsibility. Obviously, we have to get to the level where we're worthy of being redeemed. What Rav Hirsch is just pointing out, you know, it's the same way the Gemara says that there are certain keys that are in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he does not give out, that he does not delegate to anyone else. So redemption is one of those keys. HaKadosh Baruch Hu holds that process close to his heart. We have to do our part to be deserving of it. But once we are deserving of it, only God could trigger and ultimately actualize that process. But I want to show you something additional as well. If you take a look, and it's actually very apropos because it's from last week's parasha, Parashas Yisroel. So the Torah says, this struck me as I was looking at this bracha. So the Torah is defining, Lo Siga Bo Yad. God, remember, before God comes down on Har Sinai, he lays out very clear instructions about how the people are to approach, or perhaps better stated, not approach the mountain. So the Torah says, Lo Siga Bo Yad, don't touch the mountain. Ki Sakol Yisakel Oyaro Yareh. What happens? Don't touch the mountain, for he shall be stoned or cast down. Im Behema Im Ish, whether it's an animal or a person, Lo Yichya, he shall not live. Bim Shoch Hayovel. Hema ya'alu bahar. When the ram's horn sounds a long, drawn-out blast, they may ascend the mountain. In other words, what that means over here is, remember, the shofar was actually blown at Har Sinai twice. It was blown first to symbolize God's descent, and it was blown a second time to symbolize God's ascent. So what the Torah is saying over here is, don't touch the mountain. When you hear the long, drawn-out blast of the shofar, oh, and remember again, who's sounding the shofar? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? When you hear the long sound of the shofar at the end of the whole Sinaitic revelation, that will tell you that God has left the building, so to speak. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has left the mountain, and therefore you are free once again to touch the mountain. Okay, so we're all familiar with this, right? The shofar, the sound of the shofar, plays a very prominent role in Matan Torah, the Sinaitic revelation. But look at number 7. Rashi says something amazing. Rashi writes, Hayobel, whose shofar shall ayo? This refers to the shofar of a ram, which of course is unique by itself that Rashi's saying this, because remember again, this is not Moshe blowing the shofar. This is not the Jewish people blowing the shofar. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu blowing the shofar. But Rashi says it's a ram's horn. Shekin ba'aravya korin ledichra yuvla. Because apparently in Aravya, some dialect of Arabian, so they used to call a ram's horn yuvla. Yuvla. And here, if you notice, the Torah in number 6 does not use the word shofar. The Torah uses the word yovel. B'mshoch hayovel. When the long drawn out sound be over the shofar. And look at these last words of Rashi. B'shofar shel elo shel Yitzchak haya. What shofar did God blow at Har Sinai? He blew the shofar from the ram of Yitzchak. Look at number 8. So where does Rashi get this from? Rashi gets this from the Medrash. So there's an amazing Medrash. The Medrash writes, Rabbi Chananya ben Dosa Omer, Osa Ha'ayom. Now remember, what's the ram of Yitzchak? So you remember again the Akeva story, where Avram Avinu has Yitzchak on the altar, he's ready to shecht him, and what happens? Divine voice comes out and says, Al tishlach yadcha al anar, do not send your hand against the child, I don't want you to shecht him. And what does Avram do? Avram, of course, complies. And then what happens? He sees he sees a ram caught in the thicket. And what does he do? He offers up that ram. That's what they're calling Elo Shal Yitzchak. That's the ram of Yitzchak. So isn't this measure? This is amazing. He says, Rabbi Chananya ben Dosa Omer, Osa Ayo Shenivra ben Ashmashos. That aisle, that ram that was created ben Ashmashos, we're not going to get into this now, but actually it's a Mishnah in Avos that points that mentions that there were 6 things that were created at the twilight period on Friday evening right before Shabbos. So the Mishnah suggests one of the things was the ram of Yitzchak. I'm not going to get into that now. But what happens? Lo yotza mimenu davar lebatala. Every single part of the ram was used for something. There was no part that was put to waste. Afro shel ayil who you sowed al gabi hamiz meach benimi. The ashes of the ram were used for the foundation of the inner altar. The inner altar, of course, was the incense altar, was the golden altar that upon which incense was. So the ashes were used to form the foundation of the inner altar. Again, each of these statements has deeper symbolisms, which I'm taking you to the end. Gidei ha'ayil, listen to how beautiful this is. The sinews of the ayil of the ram, elu asara nevalim shel kinor, shahaya David menakeh. Listen to how beautiful this is. These were the 10 strings on the harp of David HaMelech. Right? So the sinews of the ram of Yitzchak were the 10 strings of the harp of David HaMelech. Oro shel ayil, the skin, the hide of the ram, who ezor masnov she'eliyoza, that was the belt of Eliyahu HaNavi. Karnov shel ayil, the horns of the ram. Shel smol she'takabo b'har Sinai, the left horn, the left shofar, was used by God to blow it at Har Sinai. Shene emar ve'im shochel v'kerne yovel. V'shal yamin, the right horn, shehu gidola mishal smol, that was larger than the left horn. Shu osid litkoa ba le'osid lavo. So the left horn, the left shofar of the isle of the ram of Yitzchak was used by God at Har Sinai. And the right horn is going to be used by HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Messianic era. Shene emar v'ayo b'ayom ahu, quotes the pasuk from Yeshaya, Yitaka b'shofar gadol. It will be on that day that God will blow the large shofar. The Medrash says, what's the large shofar? That's the right horn.
the right shofar of the Isle of the Ram of Yitzchak. Vayashar HaMelech Akol HaAretz. Fine. So I mean, so that's where Rashi is getting this from. So Rashi understands that the Bimshol Chayovel, the long drawn out shofar blast that God is blowing at Har Sinai, comes from none other than the actual Ram of Yitzchak himself. The Ramban in number 9 asks an interesting question. The Ramban says, Bimshol Chayovel Hema Yalu Bahar. Who shofar shall ayom? So, like we said before, Rashi said, this is a shofar of a ram. The shofar elo shall Yitzchak haya. And again, he quotes the Medrash, Lashon Rashi, who says that this horn was none other than the actual horn of the ram of Yitzchak. So, look what the Ramban writes. Velo hevi nosi zeh. I don't understand this. I don't understand what they're talking about. Why? He says, ki elo shall Yitzchak ola hikrev oso. See, the Ramban asks a very technical question. The Ramban says that when Avram offered up this ram, he offered it up as an ola. An ola is the type of carbon that is fully consumed on the Mizbeach, on the altar, which means what's left?
Nothing.
Nothing. Maybe you can get away with the ashes. Maybe the ashes. But nothing else is left. So what does the Medrash mean when it talks about over here the hide, and it talks over here the horns? So it's interesting because, you know, you would not normally think to ask such a question like this on a Medrash. But yet, the Ramban feels compelled to ask it. He says, Ke'elo shel Yitzchak ola hikrivoso. It was an ola. Remember, different types of karbanos. There are some karbanos that are partially burnt on the Mizbeach and partially consumed by the owners. An ola is a karban that is fully consumed on the altar. Va'akarnayim, va'atafayim, ha'kol nisraf ba'olos. Everything is burnt. The hoofs are burnt. The horns are burnt. So there's nothing left. So how could the Medrash say that ultimately the shofar that God sounded at Har Sinai was the shofar of the ram of Yitzchak? So he says, this is amazing, he says, Ulai, Gavala Kadosh Baruch Hu Afar Karno, Vehechziro Lamasha Haya. So Ramban gives an interesting answer. Ramban says, well, maybe God collected the ashes and reformulated the shofar from that. Maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu collected the ash and reforged the shofar. He says, "Avalafi da'ati ha'agoda hazu yesh lasod." So the Ramban says, but the truth is, by kasha, my question is not such a good question. Why? Because the Medrash is not to be understood literally. The Medrash is here to teach us. Sod literally means a secret, but secret in this context is a deeper lesson. What's the sod? What's the deeper lesson? Va'amru shazeh hakol hu pachad Yitzchok. The Ramban writes that this call, the sound of this shofar, is what we call the fear or the reverence of Yitzchak. Ulakach Amar, Vayecharad Kol Ha'am Asher B'machane. Torah says by the Sinaitic revelation that the entire nation trembled, the entire nation in the camp was in a state of fear. Velo Hisigo Dibor Bigvura Hazos Zulasi Kol. So again, what the Ramban is saying is the following. So let's just trace this for just a moment. So we begin with Rashi telling us that the shofar that was sounded was the shofar of the Isle of Yitzchak, the shofar of the ram of Yitzchak. And Rashi is basing himself on the Medrash in Pirkei Rabbi Elazar number 8, that says that the ram of Yitzchak, everything, every part of it was used for something. And it was the left horn that was used ultimately to signal the Shechina by the Sinaitic revelation, right horn that's ultimately going to be used in the Messianic redemption, Messianic revelation. So Ramban says over here, I think there's something deeper over here. You know what the horn represents? The horn of the Isle of Yitzchak represents Pachad Yitzchak. Pachad Yitzchak. Now, that is a term that is often used by Chazal in a number of different places. Pachad Yitzchak really normally represents what we call this fear and reverence of heaven that is representative of what Yitzchak of Yosef. Remember, each of the Avos stood for different traits, or they not stood for, but they embodied different traits. Avraham Avinu, of course, represents chesed, or ahava, represents this feeling of loving kindness, this feeling of love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avraham Avinu has almost like a very joyous approach in his relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to his fellow man. Yitzchak Avinu is tiferes or emes, either truth or splendor, different kinds of traits. Yitzchak Avinu is gvura. It's gvura. So gvura we translate as strength, but gvura can also be translated as austerity. Yitzchak Avinu was a man of incredible strength. He was willing to offer himself up on the altar. And austerity in that he was not his father. He was not his father. He was not the individual going around to try to spread the word of God to all corners of mankind. He was not like his father, old, engaging others to bring them closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yitzchak Avinu was very inwardly focused. Yitzchak Avinu was very much about stabilizing the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu within the Abrahamic family. That's Gevura. Pachad Yitzchak, therefore, is often translated as this sense of fear and reverence to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So again, on the most basic, you can understand what the Ramban is saying, is that what does it mean when the Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu blew the shofar of the Isle of Yitzchak? What does the Isle of Yitzchak represent? The Isle of Yitzchak represents Pachad Yitzchak, represents a fear of God. Because remember, Yitzchak Avinu, Gvura, strength, was ready to offer himself up. Yitzchak Avinu represents the ability to offer oneself up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's Yira, it's not Ava, it's not Chesed, it's not love, it's not kindness, it's austerity, it's strength, it's self-sacrifice. So what Ramban seems to be saying over here is that when Am Yisrael is gathered at Har Sinai, the shofar comes out, and what was the point of the shofar? What was the point of the shofar? Quite literally, to put the fear of God in the hearts of people. That people have to cultivate a sense of pachad. You know, it's interesting. We've moved away from this paradigm a little bit. Because the truth is, you know, I think I mentioned before, there was a fundamental dispute within the Musar movement. This is already in pre-war Europe, even before pre-war Europe, is what's the right approach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? There were two major schools of thought. One school of thought that preached shiflos ha'adam, lowliness of man, and the other school of thought that preached gadlos ha'adam, greatness of man. Ultimately, the school of thought of shiflos ha'adam, lowliness of man, that didn't really survive. Why? Why? Because nobody wants to go through life thinking of themselves as a nothing. It's not pleasant. It's not pleasant. And nobody's going, that's not a sustainable model. People have to have a positive sense of self. So we more adopt the school of thought of Kabbalah. We try to focus on the greatness of man and what man could accomplish. And when man fails, we don't beat him over his failures. Instead, what we say is, you could do so much more. You could be so. So when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu also, there is this notion we try to generally be much more, positively focused on serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of love, serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of devotion. We have moved away a little bit from fear. But fear is very important because fear ultimately creates a realization of repercussions. Right? You know, I often give this example. When your child is little and they run across the street without looking, so what do you do? What do you do? I'm sorry? All right. You give them a little patch. You give them a little patch, right? Well said. Well said, right? You give a little something. You give a little something. Now, again, this is very countercultural because today, you know, positive parenting would tell you you should talk with them and you should explain with them. You don't talk with them. What you ingrain with them is, if you go ahead and you run across the street, you're going to get punished. Because before a child can understand reasoning, that there's traffic and there's this and there's that, they understand concrete repercussions. Again, so whether it's the patch or whether it's the scolding or whether it's being sent to the room, whatever manner you choose to do, the point is the child has to have a fear that if I do this, when the child gets old, the child understands that it's in my best interest to look both ways. So then they don't need the repercussions. They understand it. But before they get to that level, they need to understand that if you don't behave correctly, there's going to be a negative repercussion for you. So there is a certain element of pachad, of fear, that is important. Again, the problem is when the pachad, when the fear becomes the dominant part of our avodas Hashem, that's not good. That's not good. But there has to be a little bit of a recognition that if I don't obey God, I could get punished. If I transgress, I could get punished. That's not my motivation for doing what I do. My motivation for doing what I do is because I realize it's important to look both ways before I cross the street. I want to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But a little bit of pachad goes a very long way. The whole idea is a very fine balance. So according to what Ramban is saying over here, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu blows the shofar of Ayil Shal Yitzchak, Pachad Yitzchak, because what's part of our spiritual maturation? What's part of the revelation? Fear. God doesn't say, you know, whoever wants to come up on the mountain, come on. Right? Whoever wants to come and let's hold hands. Yeah, let's hold hands. We'll dance a little bit. We'll sing a little. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't say that. Kadosh Baruch Hu says what? Kadosh Baruch Hu says, stay down there. Stay down there. And if you come on the mountain, you will die. This is my father. This is my Ribono Shel Olam. No, that's what Kadosh Baruch Hu said. Yes.
Why would we need a second scary
shofar
blast when it's all over?
I'm sorry. Oh, so we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. Well, no, because on a very simple, on a utilitarian level, shofar tells you when it begins, when it ends. Mm-hmm. So you need to know when the process begins, when the process ends. It was the same marker. So ultimately, what the Ramban is saying over here is that that was part of Sinaitic revelation. You can't do whatever you want. You can't do, I love you. I care about you. I want to be close to you. But there are rules. There's a framework in which you must operate. And if you live outside of the framework, there will be repercussions. There will be severe repercussions. There will be swift repercussions. This is the Ribono Shel Olam that loves me? Yeah, absolutely. The same way that my parent who loves me, when I step out of line, if it's a good parent, there will be swift repercussions. Whatever those repercussions look like, because my parent loves me, doesn't want me to repeat the negative behavior. My God who loves me from the beginning also says, no. There's a way to do things and a way not to do things. And if you don't do it the way that I want, the divine response will be swift and will be severe. But there's another possibility with Pachad Yitzchak as well. Take a look at number 10. Perhaps Pachad Yitzchak refers to something very different. The Torah says, Vayecherat Yitzchak Charoda Gidola Ad Ma'ot. Remember, this is the episode by the Bechorah. Yitzchak Avinu says to Esav, I'm getting old. I'd like to give you the blessings. Go out and prepare for me matamim, some delicacies. Bring them to me, and I will bless you before I die. Rivka Imenu hears what's going on. She quickly sends Yaakov to go ahead and bring her the two lambs, slaughters it, makes a whole nice feast for Yitzchak Avinu. Yaakov brings it in. He's all dressed up in his brother's clothing, and Yaakov Avinu gets the brachos. As Yaakov is leaving, Esav comes in. Esav says, Father, I'm back. Yitzchak Avinu realizes something has just gone very, very wrong. So the Torah says, when Yitzchak Avinu realizes that he has given the bracha to, quote unquote, the wrong son. So what's his response? Vayecharat Yitzchak charoda gidola ad ma'ot. Yitzchak shuddered a great shudder. Very fearful, very fearful. Vayomer mi eifo hu atzad atzayit. So Yitzchak Avinu says, what happened? A great shudder is not even good enough. Fear. A fear. He trembled with a great fear and he said, oh my gosh, who did I just give the bracha to? Gam baruch yihyeh. I guess he too shall be blessed. So what's interesting is, what does it mean? Take a look at number 11. The Medrash says something amazing. Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina Amar, Godol Ma'od Haisa HaCharada Hazos. You know, the Torah doesn't just say that Yitzchak was scared. It says that he was exceedingly frightened. So what does this mean? He says, this fear was even greater. Yoser Mecharada She'al Gabe HaMizbeach. Yitzchak Avinu had more fear in that moment when he realized that he had given the bracha to someone other than Esav than he had when he was bound and ready to be slaughtered on the altar. Number 12, the Das Sekinim says, "Vayecherad Yitzchak charada shtei charados charad Yitzchak." Yitzchak was only fearful two times in his life. Kishneekad, achas kishneekad. One time when he was bound on the altar, va'achas kan, and one time here, ulam becha akosul shezel haiso gidola. And the Torah is teaching us that this fear that Yitzchak Avinu experienced right here with the brachos was even greater than what? Than the fear that he felt on the altar. And Rashi number 13 says, "Umidrasho ro'o gehenom pisucha mitachtov." What happens? Yitzchak Avinu literally saw Gehenom. He saw Gehenom open up underneath his feet. What's happening over here? Take a look at number 14. Rav Chaim Shneur Hirsch says so beautifully. He explains, it is this little world, Hine Nozakanti. See, after all, that I am already old. So, refresh, I didn't quote this passage to you, but Yitzchak Avinu says, Hine Nozakanti, right? Lo yadati yomosi. Yitzchak Avinu says to Esav, I'm already old. I don't know when I'm going to die. Let me give you the blessings. Refresh says, it is made clear that he had already long had the intention to bestow such a blessing, but had been dissuaded and had yielded to remonstration. So Rav Hirsch, this is a groundbreaking Rav Hirsch. So groundbreaking that many people threw Rav Hirsch out of the camp for this particular insight that he's about to offer, but it's Rav Hirsch. So it's pretty mainstream. If it's Rav Hirsch, it's got to be acceptable. So Rav Hirsch says like this. He says, there is an unwritten battle that was being waged in the war in the house of Yitzchak and Rivka. He says, for years, Yitzchak wanted to give the blessings to Esau. For years, he wanted to. But for some reason, he never did. Now what happens? Hinei Nazakan, he says, listen, I'm an old man. I don't know what's going to be. And therefore, I have to give the blessing now. Says Rav Hirsch, why didn't he give the blessing all those years? Watch this. Rebecca, I'm the number 14, fourth line down. Rebecca, Rivka, had probably constantly argued with him, trying to convince him of the truth, and had persuaded him, anyway, leave it for a time. You are not so old yet. There is still plenty of time. And had hoped, in the meantime, that he would be undeceived. So, says Rav Hirsch, you know what's unfolding in Rivka and Yitzchak's home? For years, Rivka Imenu was trying to convince her husband that Esav is not the young man Yitzchak thinks he is. You think he's good. You think he's kind. You think he's attentive. You think he's doting. You think he's righteous. He's not any of those things. He's conniving. He's manipulative. Again, she still loves him. It's her son. Mother loves her son, even if he's an Esav. But at the end of the day, she's been trying for years to convince Yitzchak Avinu that Esav is not the Bechor, is not the firstborn that Yitzchak thinks he is. Now, again, why is Yitzchak so unwilling to go ahead and believe his wife? After all, I mean, why is he so unwilling to believe her? Because remember, again, Yitzchak Avinu grew up in a home with Yishmael. He grew up with a home where the eldest son was cast aside in favor of the younger one. He saw his father's heartbreak. He saw how broken his father was. He had to send away his firstborn son. Yitzchak, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing it. So for years, Rivka's trying to convince him. Yitzchak will not be persuaded. So finally, what ends up happening is Rivka realizes she's not going to change his mind. So what does she do? She says, you know what? Let's not deal with it right now, like the way people deal with most serious life problems, right? Let's just not tackle it. We'll talk about it later. She was hoping that what will happen. She'll buy herself some time, and hopefully in the interim, what will happen? Esav's true colors will become apparent to his father. That was the hope. But what happens? But she had not succeeded. And now what was she to do? What could she have wanted with this plan? Now remember, so sister first something amazing. Now remember what happens. So Rivka all these years is trying to convince Yaakov, you're wrong about Esav. He's fooled you. He has deceived you. Yitzchak Avinu says, Rivka, it's not true. I don't know what you have against Esav. It's not true. Rivka says, fine, you know what? We'll deal with it later. You're not so old. You have to give the blessings. Now what happens? Yitzchak summons Esav. Hinei na zakanti. Esav, I'm old. I might have to give you the blessings. Rivka hears this. And now what's going to happen? She has to act. So what's her plan? To deceive her husband. Now, understand that it could not have been Rivka Imenu's intention for Yaakov to actively steal the brachos. Why? You can't steal blessings. Right? Blessings are an utterance that calls upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do something. You can't fool God. You can't go ahead and say, you know, what happens? I'm giving my children a bracha on Erev Shabbos and somebody pushes my kid out of the way and comes underneath. They get that bracha. What is that? You can't steal a bracha. So says Rav Hirsch, so what was her plan? What was the end game with this? And Rav Hirsch says something amazing. What could she have wanted with this plan? Nothing but to bring home to him, to convince him ad hominem, that and how easily he could be deceived. If Yaakov and Ishtam can so easily masquerade as a gibor tzad, if Yaakov, a simple man, can masquerade as a skilled hunter, how much more easily can Esav masquerade as an Ishtam to him? So it says to her something amazing. Rivka wasn't trying to get the brachos for Yaakov. Why? Because he can't steal brachos. What was she trying to show her husband? That you can be pretty easily duped. Right, that all I need to do is put some clothing on our son Yaakov, send him in with some lamb chops, and suddenly you think that it's Esav. And if Yaakov could fool you so easily to think that he's an Esav, Imagine how easily Esav could fool you to think that he's a Yaakov. And in this, Isaac's undeception, through Jacob's deception, Rivka, Rebecca succeeded perfectly. Rivka Imenu's intention was never to steal the brachos. Her husband would not listen to him. He would not heed her message. And so she has to show him in indisputable terms that you can be duped, that you could be fooled. And what happens? As soon as Yitzchak realized the trick that had been played upon him, Vayecherat Charoda Gidola Admaod. He suffered a terrible fright, He received a terrific shock. He saw, as our sages put it, Gehenom yawning at his feet. Saw how all his life he had allowed himself to be deceived. Immediately, the scales fell from his eyes, and he immediately added deliberately his confirmatory and now consciously expressed blessing, Gam Baruch Yehiyeh. And indeed, he, Yaakov, who just stole the brachos, shall be blessed. So says of her something amazing. What is Vayecherat Yitzchak Charoda Gidola? What's the Charoda? What's the fear? That fear is the pain of self-deception. See, Yitzchak Avinu had created for himself an alternate reality. And in this alternate reality, Esav was righteous. Esav was good. Esav was a deserving Bechor. And therefore, Esav was fit for the brachos. And it didn't matter how much Rivka Imenu told him that he was wrong. It didn't matter how much he demonstrated. It didn't make a difference. He was convinced of the truth. And therefore, again, he was immovable. And it was only when what? It was only when it was made clear to him in almost an uncontestable fashion that he was wrong that he realized, my gosh, for all of those years, I lived in this alternate reality that I created for myself. In all of these years, I created this alternate universe. I lived in a state of cognitive dissonance. For all of these years, I created my self-fulfilling prophecy. And what? And I was wrong. And then it all comes crashing down. Because in the moment when your contrived reality comes crumbling around your feet, you see Gehenom opening up. It's a hellish experience. Life is falling down all around the mamish Gehenom. A hellish experience in this world. I realized that I was wrong, and everything I thought to be true is now coming crashing down all around me. Why is this important for us? Because remember again, what did the Ramban say? The Ramban said, or Rashi said, Vahibim Shoch HaYovel. The Yovel is what? The Yovel is the ayo, is the horn of the Ram. Rashi says, the left horn of the Ram of Yitzchak. What does the Ram of Yitzchak represent, says the Ramban? It represents Pachad Yitzchak. What is Pachad Yitzchak? Maybe Pachad Yitzchak is not simply the awe and the reverence that we spoke about before, but Pachad Yitzchak means this Vayecherat Yitzchak Charoda Gedola. The Pachad Yitzchak is the fear that is experienced when our alternate realities come crumbling down, when our facades of self-deception come crumbling down, when we are forced to realize that we led our lives colored by certain falsehoods that we wanted to believe because we did not want to accept the truth and the reality about ourselves and about our circumstances. And what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do in Har Sinai? He sounds that shofar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you want my Torah? You want my Torah? You have to be honest about what you are and what you're not. You want my Torah? You have to be. See, the great part is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God does not expect perfection. God never expected perfection. Why doesn't God expect perfection? He created us, right? So meaning, if anyone knows how imperfect we truly are, it's God. He never asks for perfection. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't ask for perfection, what does he ask for? And the answer is honesty. Just be honest. Be honest with yourself and be honest with me, your God. You're in a state of disrepair? It's okay. I understand it. I get it. You're a human being. But be honest about your faults. Be honest about your shortcomings. Don't live a delusional life where you try to pretend that they're not problems. Don't create facades of alternate realities. You know, Rav Hirsch, the same Rav Hirsch says, do you know why the Jews built the golden calf? Rav Hirsch says, actually true. The Gemara also says it. The Jews, you think the Jews believed that the calf was a god? They just saw the sea split. They just heard God speak to them. They believed that a calf. So the Gemara, Rav Hirsch quotes the Gemara that says, they wanted idolatry. They wanted immorality. The truth, that's what they want. They really wanted immorality. But you know what the interesting part is? You see, if you ask most people, would you engage in immorality? Of course not. People, I don't believe in immorality, but I do believe in alternate lifestyles, right? So I don't believe in immorality. I just believe that perhaps there are other ways to approach things. So what happens? It says, Rav Hirsch, they built the ego. I'm not immoral. I just believe in a different system of morality. Rav Hirsch says that you know what the difference between monotheism and idolatry is? That when it comes to Judaism, really not Judaism, we make ourselves in God's image. Idolatry is you make a God in your image. Decide what you want to do in life and create a structure for yourself that allows that. And the truth is, if you look at most times we make mistakes, very rarely do we sin. Instead, what we do is things that aren't really all that wrong. It's not that wrong. I know the Torah says this, Chazal says this, but the truth is what I did is not so bad for the following reason. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, come on, I have no patience for that. If you make mistakes, you sin, you do things wrong, that's okay. I'm a forgiving God. I'm your Father. I love you. I care about you. You make mistakes, you know what I want more than anything? I want to help you get back up on your feet. But you have to be honest. If you're not honest with yourself about what you are and what you're not, if you're not honest about your faults, if you're not honest about your shortcomings, if you're not honest with me, then I'm sorry, we don't have a relationship. You know, relationships can endure all kinds of trauma. But what the one kind of trauma that often relationships cannot recover from? Breaches of trust. Breaches of honesty. Because if you're not honest with me, you know, you want to tell me you failed? We could repair that. But you're dishonest with me? To regain that trust is very difficult. And so perhaps what's happening over here is what? Vahibim shol hayovel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the first thing he does, how does Har Sinai begin? The Sinaitic revelation begins by the blowing of the shofar of Elo Shel Yitzchak, the blowing of the shofar of Yitzchak's ram, the blowing of the shofar which represents Vayechar Yitzchak Charod Gedola. It was the shofar that represents Yitzchak's cry, Yitzchak's givalt. When did Yitzchak cry givalt? When he realized that the alternate reality that he created for himself has come crashing down all around him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, that's how our Sinai is going to begin. You want Torah, you want spirituality, you want a relationship? One word, honesty. Honesty. Be real with yourself. Be real with me, your God. Know what you're good at. Know what your strengths are. And know your faults. And acknowledge your faults. And work on your faults. And work on your weaknesses. Don't delude yourself into thinking they don't exist. Don't create your alternate realities for yourself. Be honest. And if there's honesty, we'll have a relationship. And that's why, again, Matan Torah begins with the shofar. And it ends with the shofar. The bookends of the Sinaitic revelation are personal and divine honesty. Be true with who you are and what you are. Acknowledge your strengths. Acknowledge your faults. And if you do this, you will have a successful spiritual career. Don't build up your alternate realities. Because one thing is clear. Those who live with alternate realities, they will come crashing down. They will come tumbling down, some sooner, some later. And when those moments happen, that the fictitious world I created for myself, the fictitious realities I created for myself come crumbling down, you literally feel like the earth under you has given way and you are standing literally in Gehenna. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us, don't do that to yourself. Be honest. Embrace the honesty. Live life with the honesty. Why is this all important for our shir? Because now remember, this is about Shmona Esrei. So perhaps this is the meaning of the bracha as well. Perhaps if you go back to number one, so we said before, Tika b'shofar gadol l'cheruseinu. The son is Tika b'shofar. Yes, of course, on the most basic level, what is this bracha talking about? Messianic redemption. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, bring us back. Bring us back. First stage in Geula is Kibbutz Golios, in gathering of the exiles. Even before there's a temple that stands on Har HaBayis, we are going to come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, bring us back. But remember we spoke about that every single bracha on Shmona Esrei has dual themes. Truth is multiple themes. But there's what the bracha is talking about for us as a nation, as a collective, and what the bracha is talking to us regarding, see differently, the bracha talks to us as an individual. And perhaps what the bracha means over here is the following. Tika b'shofar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, help me, blow the shofar. Which shofar? The shofar of Elo Shal Yitzchak, of the Ram of Yitzchak, the shofar of Pachad Yitzchak, the shofar ultimately of Bayecharad Yitzchak Charad Gidola. Blow the shofar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Because Tekam Shofar Gadol L'Cherusenu. Give me the strength to free myself of my alternate realities. Give me the strength to break down the fictitious facades that I ultimately construct all around me so that I don't have to deal with the real issues in my life. Give me the strength to be strong enough to confront my life and confront myself for what my life is and for the person I truly am. So yes, we are asking for messianic redemption, and we are asking for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to blow that great shofar of messianic redemption, Bayom Ahu Yitaka B'shofar Gadol, but we're also asking to help blow the personal shofar. The personal shofar of Vayecharad Yitzchak Charad Gidol HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, sometimes I'm not strong enough to deconstruct my alternate realities. Sometimes I'm not strong enough to be honest with who I am and what I am. Sometimes I need you, God, to help blow that shofar along with me. But give me the strength to see myself for who I am. Give me my strength to see my life for what it is. Give me the strength to live honestly. And this is such a profound yisur, because sometimes we're so scared to confront the people we really are. Why? Sometimes for good reason, because when we dig deep enough, we find a lot of stuff. There's a lot of spiritual clutter, and there's a lot of stuff in a state of disrepair. So often we assume it's just easier not to deal with it. It's just easier to kind of like just slap a coat of paint on it and just assume that it's not there. It's much easier just to sweep it under the rug. But says we learn from Yitzchak Avinu, the approach doesn't work, because at some point in time, someone pulls back the rug. At some point in time, the paint begins to peel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us at Matan Torah, all I ask of you is to be honest. And we daven every single day, Teka b'shofar Gadol, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, blow the shofar of life honesty for us. Why? L'cheruseinu. Allow us to be free. Because true freedom is the ability to acknowledge your shortcomings. True freedom is the ability to acknowledge those things that are in a state of disrepair. Because only once you acknowledge them can you gather the strength to fix it. Help us blow that shofar. Help us bring down the walls of self-deception. Help us bring down the fictitious facades, L'cheruseinu, and help us to truly enjoy the freedom, only the freedom that comes about by acknowledging and ultimately taking the responsibility to fix those things that are in that state of disrepair. All right, we'll stop over here for tonight. Gemir Hashem, next week we continue. Bracha 11. There's Mariv for whoever needs it in the base of Medrash.